All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of Reconsider, part of the Agora Podcast Network, where we don't do the thinking for you. Real quick, before I get started, I want to say thank you. We got some amazing new patrons recently, including some very big spenders. I'm just going to call out in particular here Jonathan, who I wrote back saying, like, holy smokes, thank you. And I really want to, you know, make sure that I get a signed copy of the book to you and all the other stuff that I owe you, because I'm going to owe John an episode as well. And he said, hey, guys, I just wanted to let you know that I really appreciate what you're trying to do and hope you keep it up for however long it takes for being inflammatory to go out of fashion in the United States. And, you know, I was just like really touched by this. And I just wanted to say, Jonathan, thank you. And I also got some great questions from Oleg recently for our next questions Q&A, which I'd actually like to do really soon. So if anyone is keen on joining that Q&A or adding a bunch of questions to that Q&A that are guaranteed to be answered, you can sign up to be a patron as well at patreon.com/reconsider. Somewhat recently added some more marketing oomph with a great external partner, but we're actually a little behind on our monthly expenses, so we're burning money each month and we don't have much of a bank account. So if anyone is thinking, hey, now's the time, then that would be awesome, because it could get us to this point that we're really sustainable. So with that, on with the show. So today's episode is called Social Shaming. And the reason is I get to do a lot of like thinking in the shower or on drives. And one of the things I was thinking about was I think that a lot of societal breakdown that we are for sure seeing is potentially due to human psychology, but it might be due to some, you know, new ways that human psychology interacts with the world around us that we don't expect. And generally speaking, if I have a single unified theory of drivers of social breakdown in, right, or, you know, essentially like Western democracies right now, because it's kind of happening everywhere, it's that we have a psychology that's designed by evolution to survive in evolutionary conditions, prehistorical conditions. So small tribes, a lot of danger, not a lot of sources of information outside of people you don't know. Right. And doing things the way that they used to be done is usually a good thing, because the way that it was done before kept you, you know, got you here in the first place. And it's running up against technology for the first time that it really can't handle, and it is going crazy trying to confront. So, for example, this is probably why social media is so harmful for teenagers. Right. You know, teenagers, they, you know, it's funny. My wonderful lady and I, we were watching kids. We were at the beach. We were just watching kids play. And, you know, we saw some boys all kind of like wrestling. Right. And they were like either brothers, or they were friends, and they were wrestling, and they were like, you know, it's funny, they were when one of them would win or when they were challenging each other, they'd like make these kind of like gestures and sounds almost like they were like chimps. You could see like our evolutionary ancestry in them, as like, you know, you see the same thing in puppies, right? You see the same thing in like other mammals, like young male mammals, like practicing to fight because it's like a thing, you know. And she was talking about how when she was young, as a young girl, she was looking for connection either with fake things or real things, so or with people or with like dolls and such. And so with teenagers, what we're often seeing is people trying to, you know, is people who are like on their way to becoming adults and starting to become beings who can reproduce, you know, starting to try to figure out what their social hierarchy or where they are in the social hierarchy. And there are all these games for that. And it's part of why being a teenager is stressful for everybody, no matter where they are, right? And what happens with stuff like Instagram and Facebook? Well, it just takes this and puts it on absolute steroids and turns it into a game that you cannot possibly win, right? You can never be done. You can never stay on top in a way that, like, you know, you remember the movie Mean Girls, like there were the girls on top and the girls not on top. And, but at least it was clear, right? So everyone could kind of relax, right? Like as a teenager, I was a teenager kind of before the social media age really fire actually at all. Facebook wasn't even a thing until I was in college. You know, I was on the bottom of the pecking order, but like I knew where I was in the pecking order, and like me and my nerd loser friends could go hang out and be nerd loser friends. There was stability, there was clarity, and it was in a way kind of okay. But now, you know, you're playing this game, you know, we were again on the beach, we were watching, okay, so I guess I have a lot of my realizations talking with my lovely lady, but we were watching one young girl who was just constantly like for hours, because we were just sitting on the beach for hours watching the sunset, for hours doing like stuff in front of a camera over and over. And her poor like dad and brother and mom were just like, oh man, come on. They were trying to like figure out how to tolerate her doing what was clearly stuff for TikTok, so that she could like put it on TikTok and get likes, because like this human mind wants, you know, when you're especially when you're a younger person, you crave the approval of your peers so much, right? We already knew that, and like kids will do dumb stuff for that, right? Would you jump off your bridge if all your friends did? Well, yes, mom, I probably would, right? Because I need their approval. And, you know, and TikTok seems to be this place where you can simulate approval through stuff like attention and likes. I mean, same thing with Instagram, Facebook, all this stuff. But it had clearly gotten into her mind, and she was just doing the same thing over and over, or similar things in front of this camera over and over to try to get the perfect shot for TikTok. And she wasn't able to just be at the beach. And I know, like, I sound like a crotchety old man to some people, but she looked like a rat in a cage, right? She looked like a rat in a cage with like a little dopamine button that she could hit that they experimented with in the 60s. And the human mind is not ready to deal with this, right? And it's, I personally think it's not healthy for this girl to be spending hours, you know, hours and hours just like dancing in front of this phone and dealing in particular like internal experience that she's having, that anxiety of trying to impress other people and get that, you know, kind of artificial dopamine and serotonin loop response from something like TikTok or Instagram or etc. Right. So here's an example of how, you know, human psychology, which is designed to, you know, in our teenage years, do something, which is kind of like establish popularity and pecking order and like learn how to, you know, learn how to like be a primate, right? With a bunch of other primates, how it kind of goes berserk when it runs into certain technology. And unfortunately, there's like a feedback loop where developing said technology is rewarded, right? There's an incentive to develop technology that kind of takes those behaviors and cranks them up on overdrive in order to get humans to use that app more. All right, so it's a very long way of saying TikTok bad, but it's because there's this feedback loop to develop technology to get us to do a lot of stuff that we are evolutionarily already designed to do, but with a feedback loop that cranks it into overdrive. I've also talked about this evolutionary phenomenon when talking about where we get our information from, right? We tend to get information from people who seem like us, right? Who are part of our tribe. You know, we've been talking about tribalism since 2013. Why? Well, it's because our tribe is alive, dang it, right? And like we have a way of doing things, and that way of doing things and that way of seeing the world, you know, if you think of prehistory, well, dang it, we survived, right? We made it this far. That's a good thing. And so if the people around us, the people in our tribe all say like, hey, we should do things such and such a way, well, then by golly, you know, it's worked for probably thousands and thousands of years. So messing with it is probably not a good idea. And so we're used to going, oh, okay, you're like me, you're part of my tribe. And so you are, you know, you're probably right. And if you're not part of my tribe, well, maybe you're right for those people over there, but you're not right for us. And so I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to reject what you have to say. Right. So very common. We see the Russians exploiting this. Again, this is where it runs into technology hardcore. It's not just that we get bubbles. It's that it's very exploitable that the Russians will, in 2016, they created all sorts of Facebook groups, both left-leaning and right-leaning for Sanders and for Trump, saying, ooh, you know, we are real American people who share your values, right, person? We share your values, and we both think Hillary Clinton is bad, right? Like, we're from the right, we think Hillary Clinton's bad. We're from the left, we think Hillary Clinton is bad. And Russia was able to use this kind of tribalist notion in the minds of Americans to help Hillary Clinton lose the election. And then there's a third that I want to talk about today that I find very interesting, which is social shaming. And I think that it is yet another unintended driver of radicalization and partisanship in the United States. So, how did we get here? Well, first things first. Once again, with my lovely lady, and this is why I'm starting to realize that all my good thoughts recently are coming from her, we were in the car listening to a podcast called Second Date Update, which is pretty trashy and a lot of fun, where, long story short, what happens is someone calls these, like, shock jock radio hosts, and shock jocks they are, and says, hey, I went on a great date with someone, and I'm trying to get, you know, back in touch with them, and they ghosted me, and I was hoping you could call them and talk to them for me, right? And so every now and then, this, like, turns out pretty well, because there was just some misunderstanding, and this conversation gives everyone the opportunity to talk, and usually it ends laughably badly because, of course, you know, if you're trying to get in touch with someone after a date and they don't want to talk to you, there's a good reason why. So we were listening to one, and it was a man calling in about a date he'd gone on with a woman. And what had happened was apparently they'd had a great date. You know, you always get the person calling in to be like, hey, nothing went wrong. I can't think of anything. And it was always something terrible. In this case, what it was, you know, the shock jocks call the woman he went on the date with. And she says, oh, no, he's a handsome guy. Seemed all right. It's kind of weird. He like bought me perfume on our first date that I didn't ask for. And I tried not to take it and I couldn't. But then he followed me home. And he starts defending himself. He says, well, you know, I just wanted to make sure she was safe. And she said, well, you had asked me if I could, you know, if you could follow me home. And I said, no, I'm fine. I'm a big girl. I could do it myself. Well, I'm a gentleman. And apparently you don't appreciate gentlemen. And then he starts calling her all sorts of names. He starts using the B word and the C word and all sorts of stuff. And the shock jocks are now like, hey, man, hold on. Like, this is not okay. You're wrong, right? You're in the wrong here. She's an adult. She has the right to not be followed home if she doesn't want to be. And then he starts freaking out out on the Shock Jocks. And unfortunately, it was at first only the women on the radio show who were telling him that he was clearly just, you know, being a creeper. But then he starts calling women in general all sorts of bad names. And he says, oh, you two are just like her. You're all selfish. And, you know, if you've ever been on Reddit or the internet, you can see where this is going. This guy is kind of an incel. He's going down like a hardcore misogyny path. And I was talking to my lovely lady after this, and we realized, like, you know, this guy, he is, you know, he's getting this feedback. He's getting, like, now this entire group of radio shock jocks to gang up on him and say, like, no, you've really got a problem. This is not okay. And he is absolutely uninterested. He's hardening his position that he's the gentleman and nobody understands chivalry anymore and all this stuff. He just hardens his position. And we know the boomerang problem, but what's happening here is he's being socially shamed and it is backfiring. Right. And we were able to, you know, my lovely lady and I, we were able to look back and immediately say, like, look, this guy is just going to fall further down a rabbit hole. You know, he has friends who listen to this and they're going to say, yeah, you know, some of them are going to say, dude, this is effed up. You can't do this. He's going to reject them. And then he's going to have some friends that are probably already also deeply misogynist who say, yeah, you're in the right, man. You know, that B word and those C words, they don't understand you and they don't deserve you anyway. And he's going to then isolate himself further, not just because he's hearing what he wants to hear from certain people, but because he's hearing what he doesn't want to hear from certain people. And so, you know, what's going on here? The shock jocks are trying to use social pressure to get this guy to behave, right? To change his behavior. He's clearly behaving in a deeply unacceptable way. And in a way that is, unfortunately, you know, we just have to address, like, quite dangerous, right? You know, unfortunately, like, we may learn later this guy does something terrible to some woman who, you know, doesn't conform to this guy's misogynist ideas of how women are supposed to behave. And, you know, unfortunately, we can't do anything about it right now. But the bigger point is that he has some very strongly held beliefs, and it's very common for humans. This is where the evolutionary psychology part comes in, right? It's very common for humans to hear someone say certain things that we are like, hey, this is way outside the norms, right? We talk about the Overton window, or we talk about, you know, norms for our tribe. And we say, hey, this is way outside the pale. This is beyond the pale. We can't accept it. We try to shame people into at least suppressing that, at least, like, you know, even if they're not going to change their mind, at least keeping them from expressing that or acting it, right? Because the idea is, look, if you shame people, they'll be quiet and they won't spread their hate, or they're less likely to act. And so that's what's happening with these shock jocks. And of course, this guy somehow walks away. You know, it seems a little crazy because, like, you know, if you, like, get caught, you know, stealing candy or something, right? And a bunch of people catch you, you're going to feel shame. You're going to be less likely to do that. But in this case, when this guy gets shamed, he just gets angry, right? And he's like, oh, all these people are out to get me, right? And can you think of a lot of people in America right now who think, like, people might be out to get them? There's a certain family member of mine who thinks that the cops are out to get them sometimes. And it's like, they don't share notes, dude, right? The cops don't, like, across different states, don't all go like, ooh, you. Anyway. But so this guy now thinks that the world is out to get him. He's the hero and everybody else is bad. Social pressure failed. He didn't feel that shame that you and I might expect that we'd feel if we got caught doing something that we think is bad, right? But if you have a bunch of people trying to shame you for doing something you think is good, you're not going to feel shame. You might feel humiliated, right? Let's say, for example, you know, I know someone who went to Planned Parenthood to get tested for STIs because they had been sexually assaulted. And someone, you know, they had a bunch of Christians, you know, like angry Christians outside calling her a whore, right? Well, she didn't feel shame. She felt angry and indignant. And because, one, she wasn't even going to get an abortion in the first place, right? But two, all it did was harden her idea that these anti-abortionist activists are just terrible people. And so, you know, or the problem with this guy is he was not getting feedback from his sort of core tribe. He felt he had this place he could retreat to. He didn't think he was doing anything wrong. And what he's going to do after this call is he's going to go back and kind of sort through who of his friends are his allies and who are his enemies. Now, let's say he even finds out that many of his friends are his enemies, right? You're not with me, you're against me. Well, it turns out he can go online and cry about this, right? He can go to, like, incel boards and he can talk about how terrible women are. And they'll be like, yeah, man, yeah, I had a similar experience of a time I was being a gentleman, I was trying to walk a girl home and, you know, she was just the meanest, you know, B word and C word to me. And so you can go get these notions that you have reinforced. And unfortunately, I think what's going to happen is if we try too hard to shame someone for having these bad notions in the first place, they're not going to go, oh, snap, maybe I got to change what I'm thinking or what I'm doing or what I'm saying. Maybe some of these folks have a point. I think they're more likely instead going to say, hey, F you, I want nothing to do with this. I feel like the victim here, and I'm going to go to a place where I can be a victim for being shamed rather than feel like I'm the villain. So if you're familiar with the drama triangle, there's the victim, the villain, and the hero. When you're shaming people, you're trying to make them feel like they're the villain. But if you make them feel like the victim instead, they're going to go find a bunch of other people who tell them, yes, yes, you're a victim, poor you. And they're just going to, you know, keep doing what they're doing or make it even worse. So, and I think this is happening a lot. Like, I think this is happening, you know, again, I live in a more liberal circle. So I think this is happening where we try to shame people for not wearing masks, right? And I tried to do it before and it's blown up in my face. It's very frustrating. And now I'm afraid to do it because I'm just afraid of like an altercation, right? And I think that's what, you know, people who have been shamed for not wearing a mask, right? They feel like a victim. They feel like the person trying to shame them is a villain. And they actually probably really enjoy fighting back, right? Make us think about it, right? You see videos of this online where, you know, people are in a store and they don't have a mask and they love pulling out their own phone and videoing themselves being total a-holes to everybody around them because they feel like a victim or they feel like a hero, but they feel like there are these villains around them who are trying to shame them for standing up for their rights as Americans. And I think there's other stuff that's blowing up for the left here too is, you know, one example is there's a lot of effort to shame people for not getting on board with using someone's preferred pronouns, right? And this shaming can be very public and it can seem performative at times. It could be virtue signaling at times, but it's the kind of thing that doesn't make, I think, as far as I could tell, people who aren't on board with the concept of like being transgender, I don't think it makes them more likely to say like, well, you know, and I'll just use their pronouns. You know, it does seem to like make these folks who again, don't understand or believe in or agree with like the kind of transgender theory, you know, social theory, make them believe that, you know, the left are a bunch of kind of like villains who are out to control you, right? Like this is kind of like the anti-woke reaction has come from the woke crowd, which is a thing, right? Like brigading people, right? And trying to cancel everybody who says stuff that they don't like to hear, whether or not those people are bad people, right? There's a concentrated kind of online mob social shaming effort by the woke left or the woke part of the left that has been backfiring a lot and probably been hardening the right wing. And so why do we keep socially shaming people when it seems to not work? Well, again, I think this is because it does work conditionally. Good example, right? If I steal stuff and I get caught, I'm going to be ashamed. Feel shame, I'm going to be less likely to do it. Why does shame make me less likely to do something? It's because I'm afraid of being, why does feeling shame, right? Not being ashamed, not someone doing the shaming, but why does me feeling ashamed that way or shame do that? It's because we're afraid of being socially ostracized, right? So if you go back to evolutionary humanity, there's a good reason to try to control people's behavior and keep it from deviating too much. Because if people's behavior deviates too much, you stop doing the things that worked, that kept you alive, and then you might die. Right? And we don't want to die. So it was the humans, if we think about, you know, tribes evolving, it was the tribes that tended to control behavior, you know, among their people through shame, right? And said like, hey, this isn't the way we do things, bad, 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 right? They tended to survive because too much chaos, too much dice rolling was a really bad thing during the evolutionary period. So we've all learned to shame each other. And that shame can even lead to social ostracization, right? Like tribes would get rid of people who were too weird, too crazy, too different because they were a risk to the tribe, because the tribe survival was the most important thing. So this tendency we saw keep going well into history, right? Social shaming is, you know, whether it's among teenagers, whether it's among adults, is nothing new. And it's nothing strange. It's part of every society. So if we go back and like study what anthropologists tell us about past societies, there are always social shaming mechanisms, some of which are highly ritualized. So one example we can see to know how strong this is running the gauntlet, right? You've heard the term running the gauntlet. What is it? I think if you see it's the show like Vikings or something, there's someone commits like a petty crime and the Jarl or the Thane or whatever says you have to run the gauntlet. And sorry, that was very Scottish. Apologies to all people of Northern European descent for that one. But, you know, you have to run the gauntlet. And so what happens is, you know, this person's village, like fellow villagers line up on down two lines and this guy has to run between them and they're all going to throw stuff at him. Some people throw like rotten food, some people throw poop, some people throw rocks, right? So it is shameful and it is also painful. And once you've run the gauntlet, you've paid for your crime, right? And we can all now move on, right? So it's this very ritualized, humiliating experience that you have to go through because what, why? Because that Nordic society is trying to enforce certain behaviors. If you break laws in a minor way, you're going to get shamed. we see in medieval England, David Crowther's amazing History of England podcast. He talks about if you're caught adultering, or if you like your marriage is kind of like blowing up in a public way, the village will get together and like put you and your spouse through a basically like a public, like carrying you through shame, shame kind of thing. Just like Cersei when in Game of Thrones, when she got caught, you know, having sex with her brother, right? Shame, shame. This kind of public shaming thing was a big part of ritualistic social control to keep you from doing things that were way too outside of the norm, right? And so, you know, and it works really, really well when you depend on these people around you for your, like, emotional survival and your physical survival, right? And so in pre-industrial evolution Earth, this worked really well. It was probably all you really needed. You needed a well-defined set of rules, and you mostly just needed social shame to deal with them. There were a few crazies out there who went well without the lines. They were like outlaws, right? You know, they'd like, you know, Hammurabi would cut their hands off, or, you know, they'd get thrown in jail. But for most people, most of the time, to get people from being too weird, this is all you needed. It works very well when you are stuck inside your group. Pre-internet, at least, so post-industrial evolution, pre-internet, this worked pretty well. There was more mobility, right? So, like, if you were sufficiently ostracized, you could get up and move. You weren't going to die. You had to go somewhere else. But you had to be accepted with some sort of geographical group, right? So you had to find a group of people with a certain geography that would accept you, right? And so if you think about it, you know, if you're like very liberal, or like, you know, you're gay and you're growing up in Kansas, you're like, I'm out of here, man. I'm going to San Francisco. But then you have to conform to like the gay, you know, San Francisco scene, right? And their norms. You don't have to conform to Kansas. You're not stuck in Kansas, but you do have to conform to some group's norms. That's very geographical, right? And that geographical limitation means that you've only got so many options and you can't create group norms that are too, you know, precisely defined. And the problem now is that you can just choose a new group all the time. And so what this means is it's much easier to create new groups online that are based on what you think and what you believe and what you feel. This is why there are incel groups now. There weren't big incel groups before the internet. Why? Because there weren't big groups of incels, right? You couldn't find a bunch of them in one place. If you were an incel, you were always ostracized. You were always on the outside, and you might do something terrible, right? But you're on your own. And so this means that, like, you're not going to have this reinforcement in this way that you can have now, where you can go get a bunch of people telling you how right you are and how wrong everyone else is. So, and I think this is why now people are more likely to go down weird rabbit holes than they used to be, right? So like I, for example, you know, I have some political beliefs that are like not mainstream Republican or mainstream Democrat, and I get some flack for it, but there's nothing I think that's so extreme, or at least I don't think so, that I get ostracized. Like I'll get in arguments with people, but like, you know, people around me, they assume I'm smart. Most of them know I have a degree in political science, so they're like willing to give me a bit of the doubt, even if they think I think something really weird compared to them. And, you know, when I get to hear and have this show and I can point people up. Anyway, point being, right, I disagree with people and like people get even angry. There'll be some minor social shaming going on, but not ostracization, right? Whereas like if we go back to the beginning of the show and we found out like you found out one of your friends was like a creeper stalker guy and a misogynist and he called women the B word and the C word for disagreeing with him and not accepting his form of gentlemanliness, right? We would ostracize this person. Likely, right? Maybe if you're really close with him, you try to have a talk with the guy, but it's probably not going to go well in the first place. So he gets ostracized. Then what? He goes to another spot. And so it's the thoughts that are beyond the pale that get people driven out of a normal social group. And then they go seek a new social group. Because if you look on Maslow's hierarchy, right? Belonging is a fundamental human need. People are going to go seek that belonging after it's been taken away from them. We take away that belonging from people because we have an evolutionary tendency to want to socially shame people for misbehaving, because through 99.9999% of our history, it's been a way to control people's behavior. It's been a way to get people to wear the damn mask, for example. Right? I want so much when I see people not wearing their damn mask to yell at them, right? But I have to resist because I know it won't actually work. They've been yelled at before. It doesn't work because the reason they're not wearing a mask is they've already found a group of people that are like, oh yeah, masks are for sheeple, right? And it's not all geographical. I live in San Mateo. This made it to the front page of Reddit. There was this guy, I will never forget, he's videoing himself without a mask, of course, just walking through downtown San Mateo, my home, yelling, libtards, I swear I'm not even changing his voice. This is his voice, libtards, for minutes, right? And you see a bunch of people that glare at him that are like ready to dick him, right? But socially shaming this guy, either through a physical altercation or through yelling at him, won't dissuade him. In fact, he's probably got crazy enough that he's looking for a fight, right? And we see that too. Maybe I'll do another episode on that, right? You see people looking for a fight. They want to feel like a victim, right? And it's interesting. Nobody gave this guy what he was looking for. Nobody picked the fight with this guy. They just kind of like watched him humiliate himself, but he didn't feel ashamed for his behavior. And he didn't feel ashamed, certainly, for not wearing a mask. And so what I'm getting to is that it is almost certainly usually going to be way too late for us to socially shame someone into behaving unless we're really close with them. Like, unless we're their, like, really fundamental friend or family group. And even then, it's a little dodgy, right? And that's, like, a big part of the challenge we have today is that, you know, there are a few people in my life that if I sat down and was like, dude, you've lost it, right? They'd listen to me. But most of the people we run into society aren't like that. And most of the people who have lost it have found a bunch of other people who have lost it, right? And again, whether this is like purely psychologically lost it or they have, you know, or they have somehow, you know, developed like an extreme form of partisan thinking, there's no way to help them with social shaming anymore. And unfortunately, socially shaming them harder strengthens their sense that they're a victim, pushes them further away from mainstream society where they're going to be exposed to, you know, differing ideas, and pushes them deeper into whatever like weird effed up rabbit hole is like full of incels or QAnon people or like anarchists who want to like occupy Seattle and like all those whack jobs, right? We push them deeper into that so they can get this sense that they're okay, who they are is great, and everyone else is bad. And so we know the rest, right? Because this reinforcing means like hard bubbles for these folks. Fracturing occurs rather than regression to the mean that you'd expect. You have people accelerating towards disparate groups with mutually incompatible realities around them. Because when someone comes out and tries to enforce their external reality through social shaming, it backfires. So in conclusion, our ape behavior to use social shame to reinforce norms is backfiring big time. Honestly, I don't know what the alternative is, right? Write in, especially if you study a lot of psychology. I've been thinking about psychology a lot. I'd love to talk to a psychologist, especially an academic who like thinks about this stuff. But like that deep instinct you have to yell at people when they're like being total a-holes, when they're not wearing their mask or et cetera, right? That's not just you being also an a-hole. It is a deeply evolutionary part of your mind that was critical to our survival and critical, frankly, to a lot of our, you know, society functioning in pre-industrial society. Now, it wasn't always good because we also, you know, prevented innovation. You know, Galileo was almost, you know, killed and thrown in jail and stuff like that, right? Like new thought, like always dissuading new thinking is bad. And just using social shaming to keep people from thinking or saying stuff you don't like has been used in the past. So it's been used ill as well. But it now has like kind of no chance of working for good either. And that's the problem we are in now. So when you feel that urge to socially shame someone for not wearing their damn mask or whatever it is, resist the urge. You've got to let it pass because all you're going to do is make it worse for them. And you just need to like breathe through it and move on and go find something hopefully more productive to do with your time. So that's what I got. Hope you enjoyed. And again, psychologists, write. Would love to hear from you. Anyone who wants to, again, who would love to help us out on Patreon, we've got some very cool rewards for you, including your own show, including a signed copy of Wedged. And we need a little bit more help to really, you know, to really end up at a financially stable place. So until we speak again, don't let the pundits do the thinking for you. Pause and reconsider. This is Eric signing off. Thanks, everyone.